So the Gemara here on Daf Chaf Vav Amud Beis talks about various requirements for shofar for Rosh Hashanah of Yom Kippur. And there's an interesting debate, which I was thinking about a little bit, between the Rambam and the Ravid, about the criteria of what's necessary. The Rambam has a big chiddush, where he says first that the shofar from Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur has to be kafav, needs to be bent. And then he writes, V'chol ha-shofros psulim chutz mi keren ha-keves, except for the keren of the aisle, the keves, the ram of some sort. So that's the only one that's kosher. Everything else is possible. And the Ravid challenges the Rambam and says the idea of kafuf is only mitzvah alma. But if you use a yael, which is a straight shofar, that's fine. So I was just putting some thought this morning to this for some time, but I think this morning I have some understanding. Maybe the Ravid is attacking the Rambam for the concept of kafuf, that it's bent, it's curved. The Rambam really says two different dinim. He says one din of it being kafuf, and he's another din of it being dafka from the keves. So the Ravid is only pointing about the kafuf element. I think the Rambam would agree to the Ravid that the idea of kafuf would be kasher b'di'evit. But I really think the Rambam is drawing from a different Gemara. You saw it probably quoted in the Torah, this other Gemara in Daf Tezayin, where the Gemara itself says that Lama token b'shofar sha'ayah, why do we use the ram, which is synonymous to the kevis, the different terms and words of animals, I don't really know all the animals, but it's synonymous to the ayah. So asks Gemara, why do we dafk use the ayah? So Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, tikku lefanai b'shofar sha'ayah, kidei she'ezkor lachem ha'kedas Yitzchak ben Avram. Uma le'ani aleichem kilu ha'kedasam atzmechem lefanai, as if you put yourself as the carbon, yourself as the akedah. So this Gemara doesn't have a question of kafir versus pashut. That's the Gemara in Chavav and Rebbe, kafir versus pashut, how one should daven in the name of Tvila. But there's another element, which is tezayin, which is to remember the Kedesh Yitzchak. And so I think while the Ravid's correct on the attack of the Rambam, based on later on Chavav, but the Rambam is not drawn from the Gemara of Chavav. He's drawn from the Gemara of tezayin, where the element of a Kedesh Yitzchak is a chelek from the mitzvah, and that's a requirement. So legabe kafuf and pashut, you're right. There's what to work with. There's the lechachil is b'dievet. But legabe kedus yitzchak, that's a requirement, a necessary requirement. And therefore the Rambam says, if you don't have that, that'll be possible. Not because of pashut versus kafuf. It's possible because it's not the kedus yitzchak. That's the element. While the Ravid thinks that Gemara, it might be just be a lechachila. It's a nice inyan, but that's not ma'akev the mitzvah. That's where I think is how essential is the inyan of a kedus yitzchak to the mitzvah of shofar. That's why I think the machlokes between the Rambam and the Ravid is. So now this discussion ends up being interesting because it gets into a conversation of hiddur mitzvah with respect to shofar. With respect to shofar, there's no concept of hiddur mitzvah for the Rambam. Rambam just says there's one shofar, that's it. There's no other choices. It's the keves v'zehu. But according to others, as you saw, there is a discussion whether or not hiddur mitzvah applies or the different levels for shofar. And part of it talks. It starts off with the Gemara in Shabbos and Gemara in Nazir. Hopefully you picked up on the subtle difference between the two Gemaras, where the Gemara in Shabbos leaves off the list the shofar na. Gemara Shabbos Kuf Lamed Gimel says Zek Keli V'Anveu Hisna Lefanav B'Mitzvos Ase Lefanav Sukkah Na Lulav Na Shofar Na Titzis Na V'Chul. The Gemara Nazir, seemingly the same exact brisa, to Zek Keli V'Anveu Inna Lefanav B'Mitzvos Esa Lefanav Sukkah Na Lulav Na, and jumps to Titzis Na and leaves off shofar na. So there appears to be a machlokas or contradiction between these two gemaras, these two brises, these two presentations, whether or not shofar is subject to the mitzvah of hiddur mitzvah or not. And I think at first glance, that might be part of this machlokas as well between the Rambam and the Ravid, where the Rambam says there's no levels, there's no madregos, there's no levels, it's all, there's one shofar, the zehu, it's the shofar of the kevis, and that's it. There's no hiddur mitzvah, it's that shofar and that's all. Well, the Ravid and others hold that no, they're different levels. So you could get a keves, if not a keves, you could use a ya'el, you could use another animal. There are different levels of kafur versus pashut. And therefore, it is shaykh to have hiddur mitzvah with respect to shofar. So maybe these two gemaras is really a machlokas between the Rambam and the Ravid. So let's talk about whether or not it's really shaykh to talk about hiddur mitzvah when it comes to shofar. The only place that I saw quoted, the only perish that actually uses hiddur mitzvah in the context of shofar is the Bach. Other than that Gemara of a shofar, no, the Bach is the one who mentions the concept of hiddur mitzvah. And he mentions hiddur mitzvah, the big nafkamin is always, how do you, you know, what's the relevance of hiddur mitzvah or not? It's always nice to have a beautiful eserg, a beautiful lulav, a beautiful sukkah. What's the nafkamina? So the nafkamina is the Gemara in Bava Kamma says, Ad Shlish, a person should only pay a third of the price for Hidda Mitzvah. So Machlok is how to understand it, but let's just simply speaking, you have a Esok that's $100, so you could go to a third more than that, to $133 Berech, to pay for a more expensive Esok. But to go beyond that, that would be too much for a person to ask of a person to pay more than that amount of money. So this Indian of Hidda Mitzvah, I know some of you spoke to me during Seder about this concept of Hidda Mitzvah. Now, if we didn't know anything, if we didn't learn this sugi, we didn't learn this brisker rav that you saw inside, we all would have said Hidda Mitzvah is defined by how beautiful something looks, how something appears. That's what we all would say, I think. Not about levels of halachic fulfillments, of mechumras, or mitzvah min hamufchars. That's what we all would have thought. It's all about how something appears. So the truth is, there's really a big machlokas in the Rishonim whether or not Hidda Mitzvah applies to something that which is visible or not. So there's a Mordechai that talks about, if you have a type of Sefer Torah cover, where the outside is very pretty, and the inside is not so pretty. So the Mordechai says, put the uglier side, if you will, on the inside so nobody sees it. And the outside, the pretty cover, should be on the outside so everybody should see it. Because Hidda Mitzvah is only about that which is visible. And he brings a raya, the Mordechai brings a raya from the Mizbeach. That Mizbeach had gold on it. On the outside was gold, gold plated. But the inside was wood. So you see, we don't care what the etzem of the Mizbeach was. We just want it to look pretty on the outside. So he says, we see, so too by Sefer Torah, as long as the outside of the meal, the outside of the Sefer Torah is pretty, we don't care what's on the inside. And that's the raya that the Bach says. Now, the Gra argues, and the Gra says that's not true. He doesn't think you could bring a raya from the Mizbeach that was metzupa mibachutz, covered on the outside with the gold, because all the individuals who would work in the Beis HaMikdash, and they'd fix the Mizbeach, they would see the inside. So it is visible at certain times. And therefore, he didn't feel it was appropriate to bring a raya from that Gemara, that concept that Hidda Mitzvah only applies to that which is visible. So what comes out from this is, again, whether Hidda Mitzvah is something that is visible only, or is Hidda Mitzvah something that even when it's not visible, does it apply when it's not visible? So if it's not about being visible, it's not about appearance, what would Hidda Mitzvah be? How does one define Hidda Mitzvah if it's not that which is noticeable? So this is the Chiddush of the Brisker Rav. Brisker Rav says Hidda Mitzvah applies not to how something appears, how pretty a lulav is, how pretty an esog is, how pretty a sukkah, Sefer Torah is. The Brisker Rav says that Hidda Mitzvah is all about performing the mitzvah in the highest quality possible. You have different levels, so you want to perform the highest level possible of the mitzvah. So he says that the Rambam never quotes this brisa of Zek Kelev Yamveyu. He only mentions it in the context of Hilchos Lulav and a few other places scattered about. He doesn't say, Kol HaMahadir B'mitzvah HaRezim Meshubach. He doesn't talk about that concept. He says, Hidda Mitzvah is only defined within that particular mitzvah and the parameters of that mitzvah. So he says, it's a shayach to Lulav because Lulav, what the Gemara uses as that Kelim Amveyu is when there's an Eged. When you wrap the Dalmim together, so that's a halachic requirement. It's not just Stam that a Lulav looks pretty because it's nice and neat and packed and bundled together. Because the Gemara talks about there's a mitzvah of aguda achas. One of the big concepts of sukkahs is a kulam of aguda achas, all in one sukkah, they're all connected, all different people coming together. And the dal meaning represents the concept of aguda achas. So there's a halachic requirement of there being an eged. The Gemara says that kelev anveyu, just a hidden mitzvah. Yes, hidden mitzvah is only relevant when there's a halachic aspect to it, when there's a halachic relevance to it, such as the Eged by Lulav. The next Rai he brings is by Tzitzin Shein Makvin. What's the Rai by Tzitzin Shein Makvin? So on Shabbos, when one does a Bris Milah, because of course you could do a Bris Milah on Shabbos, the Pasuk says, B'yom HaShmini, Afilu B'Shabbos. So the Milah is certainly Docha, but you're able to finish the Milah and even remove all the Tzitzin Shein Makvin. It's Tzitzin Shein Makvin are parts of the Orla that's not Maki of the Mitzvah. You'd still get the Mitzvah. But you could still continue the Maisa Milah. It's a Shabbos because the Hidda Mitzvah is a chelik of the mitzvah. It's not stam just because something looks pretty, something looks nice. It's because that's a chelik of the mitzvah. So he goes on to prove, and he has to sometimes go to great strengths to prove how is a certain application of Hidamitzvah, not just how pretty something looks, but it's really how halachic it might be. So he says, he gets one tzarchin, he says, sukkana. It's a sukkana. Sukkana, you have to have nice walls, nice chach, nice tables, nice chairs. How is that chelik of the mitzvah? So he says, because the etzim of the mitzvah of sukkah is teshukain to do. That's part of the definition of the mitzvah. To live in the sukkah how you live in the house. It's not just to make it look pretty, it's because I'm supposed to be comfortable like living in my house. It's a halachic requirement. And therefore, one should have to put tables and chairs and candles and svarim and perhaps carpet and couches to make their sukkah just like the house inside. Not because it looks nice, because there's a din of teshu, the din is teshu, came to do, live how you live inside. That's a halachic requirement, and therefore it entails hiddur mitzvah. Hiddur mitzvah is when you don't have to do the mitzvah in that way. I could be out to the mitzvah of sukkah just sitting there without anything. But hiddur mitzvah says you could fulfill that mitzvah in a better way, halachic way, when I do the added chumras. So I'm not sure if you saw this tosis in our Gemara Chaf Ches Mabez. I'm going to get the chance to see that tosis at the end. So long Tosis, Chaf Ches Mabez, hopefully we'll do this together in greater detail about Baal Tosif. But at the very, very end of the Tosis, where the wides get longer and wider, he's talking about how Baal Tosif, a person can add on to an extra parsha of tefillin, extra tzitzis. He said, Misukah ein lahavi raya mash ein over ba'asei dal mechitas. Av agav damrinan shtayim kilchasen v'shlishis afil tefach. I'm really yod to the mitzvah of sukkah with two walls and a little bit. So how come we could go ahead and build four walls? The fourth wall is unnecessary. He says, because the kol shekein kishe'osu dal mechitas tfei adif. It's better to have four walls. Why? Tabe teshu kein tedru. Yes, I'm yod to the mitzvah with two walls and plus a little bit. It might be Baal Tosif. It's hid the mitzvah without four walls. Because teshu kein tedru. So teshu kein tedru is a halachic requirement. It tells us why there's no Baal Tosif adding walls. It tells us why a person should have a sukkah na. Just like if a bias na, your sukkah shows to be na because it's a halachic requirement of teshu kein tedru. Now, one of the big questions Briskerov asks as well is, so how come what's considered a sefer Torah na? What's this content of wrapping sefer Torah with beautiful coats and beautiful wrappings? That's not an inyan of the Sefer Torah itself. That's an inyan of just hiddur mitzvah, how something looks. That's how noy, how beautiful something appears. But why is that a halachic requirement? So this seems to undermine the Briskerov's whole entire concept. So what is the answer? Anyone see the answer at the end?
Kavod.
It's kavod. In your kavod. You're right. It's not an inyan of the mitzvah itself of Sefer Torah. But there is an element of kavod Torah. That the Sefer Torah must be covered. And that's an inyan of kavod Torah. And once it's kavod Torah, that you should cover it and respect it. So therefore, there's a halachic requirement of hiddur mitzvah in that as well. It would, I guess, be similar to, you know, maybe how a Talmud Chacham dresses, how he wears clothing, and it shouldn't be any stains on what he wears. That's not just stam, about hidden mitzvah of him, how he looks, how he appears. Because it's a concept of kavod of a Talmud Chacham. A kavod of a rav. He has to dress in a certain way. And once the requirement of a Talmud Chacham dressing in a certain way, the Gemara says how he has to dress, very simple, not his shirt untucked and not with torn shoes, and not too fancy, somewhere in the middle where he looks respectable. So that's a requirement brought down in halacha. I'll bring a story of Maisa actually for this. See, you guys are a little slow. It seems to be a little lethargic, it seems, from maybe the first day of a Monday morning of the week. Let's get you guys into it a little bit. May Nila Maisa. So there's a Maisa of the Rav Yashiv one time. When he was, he used to work in one of the Bate Dinim, and he would collect money from the Israeli government for doing so. And some of the people in the Haredim were not very happy. They felt he was a big Zionistic individual and collected money from the state. He supported the state. So one day he's coming home from work from the Bezdin, and a Yid came over to Rav Yashiv and he threw three eggs at Rav Yashiv. And Rabbi Yashiv stopped midway, and he had eggshells and the egg yolk dripping down his coat. And I don't need to tell you, Rabbi Yashiv knew the Gemara that a Talmid Chacham doesn't walk around dirty, and he knew he was a Talmid Chacham. He didn't speak like that. He was an incredible honor, but he knew where he stood. If you're a Dayan, so that's you certainly have gotten to the level of being a Talmid Chacham. So he refused to take any further steps while his coat was filthy with eggs dripping down. So he stopped midway, and he just took out his handkerchief and just started cleaning off the eggs until finally everything was clean. And the individual who threw the eggs at him was just staring, watching Rabbi Yashiv in this disgrace. So afterwards, now I know what you and I would have done. Had someone did that to us, whether we would have yelled at the guy, hit the guy, thrown the eggs on top of him, who knows, something a little bit more aggressive than Rabbi Yashiv. Maybe we would have cursed the guy out. Maybe we would have just walked away and ignored it. Rabbi Yashiv did the complete opposite. He decided to give the guy a bracha. That's a tzaddik. He gives a bracha. Everything you would not have thought to do, he does dafka that. Gives the guy a bracha. And listen to the godless of the bracha, and then listen to how the bracha was fulfilled. So the bracha what he gave was, he understood that this guy in the middle of the afternoon had nothing better to do than throw eggs at some old man walking home from a bezdin. So obviously that guy had a lot of time on his hand. So he gave the bracha to the individual that you should be zocha to be too busy to ever do this again. Fine. This guy had been married for a number of years and had not been zocha to any children. The next year, his wife gave birth to triplets. The three eggs turned into three children. And he was very busy at that point. Okay, so either way, we see the concept how Rabbi Yashiv, very machmir in this din of the Kavod HaTorah. So it's not just Stam, how someone looks. It's really an inyan of Kavod HaTorah, Kavod of Talmid Chacham, Kavod of Sefer Torah. And therefore, the Brisker felt that it is important that every Hiddur Mitzvah must be an application, a halachic requirement, not simply just how pretty something looks. And someone asked me, according to the Briskers, are they not into buying a nice Esek box, nice anything, if there's no halachic requirement? And perhaps they would not be makbid on it because there's no hidden mitzvah, but they would still think, I would imagine, there's in it of chavivas ha-mitzvah. Chavivas ha-mitzvah is showing love for a mitzvah. That could still be manifested through buying a nice silver esek box. It might not be a check of hidden mitzvah, but still chavivas ha-mitzvah. Chavivas ha-mitzvah, you have the Gemara talks about, or Ramah talks about kissing a mezuzah. Some kiss their dal minim. We kiss our tzitzis. Kissing tefillin. Kissing the matzahs, kissing a shofar. I don't know if I've seen Yosef. Does your father kiss the shofar? No, he doesn't. We should talk to him about kissing the shofar. Every mitzvah is in it to kiss a mitzvah. It's not a hidden mitzvah. That's chavivus a mitzvah. You showed how a mitzvah is so chaviv to us. So yeah, I think the Briskers would agree to that. There's a chavivus a mitzvah buying nice things as long as it's not in crazy expense and it's not breaking the bank. But in terms of the halachic definition of hidden mitzvah, it's only when there's some halachic element of teishu kein tiduru, kavod ha-Torah. So there is one interesting application, another many interesting applications, but one comes up. There's a concept called sirtut. Anybody know what sirtut is?
The lines.
Lines, right? Lines, if you look inside a mezuzah, you'll see sirtut. Lines that they kind of carve inside the parchment. So by mezuzah, there's a requirement of sirtut. You have to have these lines in the mezuzah. And I remember I once had a shiloh. When I moved from my apartment in Queens, I moved out to the Five Towns, so I had taken the mezuzah because the person coming in didn't want to have mine, so he brought his own, so I took mine. And I just figured, I'll look to see if they're okay. And noticed, actually, that the sirtut, there's no sirtut in it. So I asked Rav Schechter. I remember that it was a number of years ago, it must have been over 10 years ago, so I asked him, I showed him the cloth, and he was being very awkward about it. He was like putting his hands behind his back and like looking at it. And I chapped that he wasn't touching the cloth. So I looked at the halacha afterwards that you shouldn't touch the cloth of a mezuzah unless you wash your hands first. It comes up by Megillah as well. Megillah's Esther, when you lay from the cloth, ideally your mouth says you should wash your hands before holding onto the cloth of a Megillah. Either way, so I asked him, there's no sirtut. You can see it. It was completely removed. So he said there's a suffix in Rabbi Kivi Eger about the sirtut, requirement of the sirtut for mezuzah, is it only a requirement when they write the osios initially? If it fades away, it's fine, because the whole concept is that the letters should be straight. So you wrote them, and the sofer wrote them, they were straight, and they were there. But if they faded away, that's fine. And others say, no, the sirtit is actually a chelik of the mitzvah. And even though you wrote the letters and everything straight, you still must have the sirtit as well. That's a, I believe I call it correctly, it's a safek of Reb Kivega. So he recommended getting a new mezuzah. So this concept of the sirtit only applies to Sefer Torah, it applies to mezuzah, yeah?
Why would he recommend that? Because, I mean, we saw in the Makoros, the sirtit, you don't need them in film because you're not reading it. So I can understand why you need a mezuzah when you're writing it, because you want to write it straight. But once you're already after the fact, you're not reading the mezuzah really either.
Yeah.
So the Torah, you'd be able to say that you don't need it for mezuzah.
Yeah, excellent. Very, very good question. It's because we have Halach Moshe Mis Sinai that mezuzah requires it. So even though the application might not be relevant anymore,
the writing. Maybe the halacha moshe b'sinai is by the writing.
That's the suffix of Reb Kivega. That's a very suffix. Is it the halacha moshe b'sinai that it's dafka for the ksiva, so that it should be written well, or is it to tell me that's a guf, chelik of the guf of the mitzvah, mezuzah must be there even after the writing?
But I would think, based on svara, it lends itself to say that
halacha moshe b'sinai may not be based on svara though. This is the masar we have. We'll take a look. I haven't seen it in a little while, but we can take a look later on. We'll look at Reb Kivega, see how he says this. But I believe it's simply that it's just a gzeirat kasev, if you will. It's just a mesorah. It has to be that way. Or no, it's because of a svar, like you're saying, and that's a goof of a suffix. He doesn't know. Yeah, I'm not sure if he says that or not, but you could suggest that. You could apply that suffix.
That would mean to get a new mesorah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now, he also might question, I'm trying to remember now, we're talking about this more, there's a shiloh also, whether or not you could put sirtit in after you wrote it as well. That's another suffix. Let's say it was written with sirtit. It fades. Could you fix it by adding the sirtit after the fact?
Or if it's not for the writing, then it shouldn't be a problem. If it's just there because it needs to be there, like that's the zero, that would make plenty of sense.
Correct.
If it's not about the writing.
It might be in the order where it's done. I don't remember. I remember this being a suffix. I don't remember exactly the details of it. So, but this Indian of sirtit applies to a Sefer Torah, it applies to mezuzah, it does not apply to tefillin. So why doesn't it apply to tefillin? So we have two different explanations in the Rishonim. They seem somewhat saying the same thing, but in the end they're really not saying the same thing. And the Ramban writes in Gittin Da'av Vav Amud Beis, this happened to be the Gemara we saw the other day about Rabbi Yasser, Rabbi Yonasan learning the Pelegesh Begivah Sugya, that's the same Amud. So the Ramban there says that tefillin does not ein tzrichan sirtir, shlo nitnu likos bam. It's not meant to be read. El lochupin of tmunim, they stay hidden, they stay covered up, and therefore it's unnecessary to have sirtir. Who cares if it's a little bit, on an angle, a little bit lopsided? As long as the osios are there and all the halachas are there, who cares how that aspect is? And Tosas in Menachos says no, sirtir is because zekeli v'anveu. And since tefillin is covered and you don't see it, it's in lo shaykh beinoy. So I saw in the Chavisel Sashar, one of my favorite svarim, those who don't know, Rav Mordechai Kalbach, he's a Rosh Chavura in Mir, maybe he broke off the Mir or something, I don't know exactly, but he's got great lumdis al Torah. It's a very dense sefer. He's got six volumes or seven volumes al Torah, and he's got one in Shavuos and a small one in Megillas Esther. So he thinks there's a machlokas between the Ramban and Tosos here, that the Ramban understands that hiddur mitzvah is only when there's a chelik of the mitzvah itself, like the bris kerav. So the element of Sefer Torah having sirtit is we're supposed to read the Sefer Torah, and in of reading the Sefer Torah. Right? The whole element, the whole idea of Torah Shebech Chasav, Torah Shebech Peh, what's the difference between Torah Shebech Chasav, Torah Shebech Peh? Torah Shebech Chasav is meant to be written and read. Someone asked me the other day, I remember how it came up exactly, but there's a concept, the Shulchan Aruch Rav talks about this and others, that the mitzvah of Torah Shebech Chasav is to read, and the mitzvah of Torah Shebech Peh is to know. So if I read Gemara without understanding, I don't really get a mitzvah. There's no value in just reading Reish Lakish of Yochanan, B'no Suach, there's no value in that. But to read Psukim, even though I don't understand, I could get a mitzvah. Yotze Kriya, Torah Shebech Chasav is about reading and writing. Torah Shebech Peh is about understanding. There's a great Gemara in Brachos, I think it's Daf Vav, talks about various schar you get for various mitzvahs. The Gemara talks about Agra of, I forget how they use it, it's Aramaic, but Agra of going to a Beis Avel, Shtikusa, silence. You go to Beis Avel, you don't speak. People don't how sick, how much pain was she in, how'd she die, what was her last words. No, you stay there, you're silent. And if the Avil engages you in conversation, you could open up. There's an Isra to talk unless you're spoken to by the Avil. So the schar of a base Avil is to sit there silent, mishtika, to be silent. So that's a whole list of different agras you get for different mitzvahs. So the Gemara says the agra de kala one gets for going to a shir, agra de kala, yorche kala, is the mitzvah of rita, which is running. Running to the shir is the schar you get. So Rashi says, why don't you get the schar for the shir itself? So he said, because no one remembers the shir. You go to the shir, and you leave the shir, no one knows. So you don't get the idiyas haTorah. So you lost the Torah Shebaal Peh. Fine. But you get the running to the shir, that much you get. That's schar you get, schar halicha. That's the schar that's there. The Torah Shebaal Peh is all about knowing, understanding. And Torah Shebaal Chasah is all about reading and writing. So since Sifrei Torah and mezuzahs to a certain extent is meant to be read, so the whole idea is that it has to be, is a mitzvah in the keem of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah by having sirtit, to make sure it's legible. You can read it straight. So sirtit's a chalik of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Masha'en kein tefillin, there's no element of limud Torah of reading the tefillin. And therefore the Ramban says there's no need of sirtit. Sirtit's only hiddur mitzvah. But hiddur mitzvah is only relevant if it's shaykh to the mitzvah. There's no mitzvah of reading tefillin. There's a mitzvah of reading Sefer Torah, but no mitzvah of reading tefillin. Tosfos and Menachos has a whole other approach. He says it has nothing to do with the hiddur mitzvah. It's not related at all to a mitzvah of learning or reading. It's whether you see it or you don't see it. Whether it's pretty or not pretty. So, Sefer Torah, you open up, it's pretty. Tefillin, you don't open up, and therefore, who cares if it's not pretty? Not because there's a hiddur mitzvah, is a chelik of the key mitzvah of Sefer Torah. Because it's how something looks, how pretty something looks. So this machlokas between the Ramban and Tosos is that machlokas we've been talking about, where the hiddur mitzvah is about how something appears, how pretty something looks, or it's about an added level, a higher quality of the performance of the particular mitzvah. There is a mabit, the Kiryas Sefer. Kiryas Sefer, there's an interesting mice about the Kiryas Sefer as background. Kiryas Sefer, the mabit, lived in the same time as, around the same time as the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. And it was Yadua that they were having, three of them with the big dolim of the time. They're having some form of race to write the final work on halacha. Every single tekufa, at the end of the Mishnayos, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi put together the Mishnayos, he put it all together. Ravina Vashi put together all of Gemara. So then there's a certain time they felt that we got to a certain time in history. Let's now kind of close off this chapter in history and then allow the next chapter to move ahead. So the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah, and the Mabit were working hard to create some final work on halacha. So the Shulchan Aruch, Rav Yosef Kairo, was one step ahead of the Ramah in each step. So first they decided to write the Torah, had his Torah out. They wanted to write a Perish in the Torah. So they're both racing to write a Perish in the Torah. The Beis Yosef wrote his Perish, a very extensive work and a commentary on the Torah of the Gemaras and the Rishonim. Ramah tried doing the same thing, but he kind of was a little bit slow on the delivery, so he ended up just writing his Ha'aras, the Darche Moshe, on the Beis Yosef. So then it came to writing this final work. So the Shulchan Aruch and Ramah were racing along with the Mabit. Shulchan Aruch came out with his first. So Ramah says, why do I need to do another Sefer for the Ashkenazi Shulchan Aruch? I'll just make my comments where we differ from the Svardim. So that's why he made his Haggah along the way. But he wanted to really write a whole Sefer on Shulchan Aruch just for the Ashkenazim. But he lost the race to the Beit Yosef. Happens to be, just as an aside, because I feel the energy is low here, I'll add another story about the Ramah here. The Ramah, oftentimes you find V'chei Nagu. I remember Rabbi Simon once said from YU, he said, when he was giving shir 20 years ago, he told the story once, maybe in the whole shir, an hour. It used to be shir and YU was 2 hours long. Maybe one story. Now every 15 minutes you need another story. Another commercial. That's the negative way. The positive way is that we need the stories inspire us. It's not just that we need it, it's just that it's because we're keeping us awake. There's a lot of depth in stories. So Ramah, you look at the Ramah, oftentimes he says, V'chei Nagu, V'chei Nanu Nogin, Ein Nanu Nogin. It's always about Nagu, Nagu, Nagu. Why? He's always talking about Nagu. So the Ramah, when he moved to Krakow, he became a Rav in Krakow. So there's a very strange custom that was there, which was that after a woman had a child, so around 6 weeks later, we should go to the mikvah. So the mikvah lady would tell the gabbai, and the gabbai would give the husband an aliyah the week that the wife would go to the mikvah. to give an aliyah that week his wife went to the mikvah. So it was very inappropriate. No one needs to know when the wife's going to the mikvah. And to make a public event to give the husband an aliyah because the wife's going to the mikvah, why would one do that? So Rama immediately abolished such a minhag in Krakow. That week, a guy's wife had given birth and went to the mikvah that week. And he came to Shul at Shabbos. He was unaware of this minhag. He was away, so he didn't know that they abolished such a minhag. And comes to Shul, and he doesn't get an aliyah. And he got very insulted, and he asked what was going on. They explained to him that they had this minhag, and they got rid of the minhag. Their mother felt it was inappropriate. And then after a little bit of research, they realized that the guy's wife actually never went to the mikvah. But he said she went to the mikvah, but she never went to the mikvah, actually. And their mother understood at that point that the minhag was in place because you weren't able to trust the women. So in order to hold them accountable, they said, okay, when you go to the mikvah lady will tell the gabbai to make sure your husband goes to the mikvah. But now no one's checking up on this. No one's telling the gabbai, so women didn't have to be forced to go to the mikvah. And that week, that wife didn't go to the mikvah. Her ma regretted undoing this minhag, because he realized what was the impetus for it in the first place, and he reinstated it. And he dedicated his life from that point on to always, whatever the minhag is, not to change the minhag. Even though it may not make any sense, and even though it might seem counter to Derech Eretz and to what's appropriate, if that was a minhag, he would keep it in place because you never know why a minhag evolves. And that's why it always says, V'chei nagu, ein anu nogin. I'll do one more for you guys. Maybe the pizza tomorrow will wake you guys up a little more. But there's another Maaser Reb Akiva Eiger, talking about Sifrei Torah and the Osios. So there's a din that if a min is not pekoris right to Sefer Torah, the din is you have to burn such a Sefer Torah. The Gemara Gittin says, you burn such a Sefer Torah. So one time they found this Sefer Torah. They didn't know who was the Mechaber, who was the Sofer. Was it a min or was it a Kasher Sofer? So they brought the Sefer Torah to Reb Akiva Eiger, or they brought the Shiloh at least to Reb Akiva Eiger. What should they do? You burn it or do you use it? It's two opposite things. So Reb Akiva Eiger said that look at the last few psukim, the last few osios of the Sefer Torah. And if all the osios are the same exact to the rest of the Torah, the same writer, the same sofer, then you should burn the Sefer Torah. Because that means that this sofer did not follow the minhag, the accepted minhag, that when you complete a Sefer Torah, you invite all the local rabbanim to sign their own oaths. Back then, each rabbi was able to write their own letter, not like now you like hold the guy's elbow or the back or you just like appoint him. Back then, the rabbis knew how to actually write the letters in. So the last 8 psukim or so would be different letters, depending how their ksav was. So he said, if every letter was the same exact as the entire Sefer Torah, that means the sofer did not continue the minhag inviting all the local rabbanim, that means it did not be kores, and he passed him to burn the Sefer Torah. And if the osios are different, so then you can keep the Sefer Torah. I don't know what happened with this particular Sefer Torah, but that was the psak. We see how important minhagim is. That you could use a minhag to burn a Sefer Torah if need be. So either way, back to the mabit. So the mabit is along with the same race with the Beis Yosef and the Ramah. So he also wrote his Sefer, it's mabit, but it's all in the Ramah. He didn't include anyone else. While the Shulchan Aruch included, for the most part, pretty much a vote between the Rambam and the Rif and the Rush, two of the three for the most part, but he certainly includes others as well. The Mabit just chose the Rambam and just kind of summed up the Rambam. And he never really made it to being one of the final authorities in Halacha, but he's used and usually has interesting Piske Halacha. The Rav Shechter likes to say that if you want to look for Chiddush, you look at the Mabit for a big Chiddush. But we don't usually assume like him Halacha. So either way, the Mabit says, back to our sugya here, now, Bit says that if a person writes a Sefer Torah and Shem Hashem Shelo Lishma, it's kosher. Why? Because Stam Lishma. When you write Yud Kei Vav Kei, the Stam of a person's Das is Lishma. You don't need to have Lishma. Dafka, I'm doing Lishma. A person's mind when he's writing Sefer Torah is Lishma. That being said, Bit said it's a Hidda Mitzvah to write Shem Hashem Lishma. Why is it a Hidda Mitzvah? You can't see the difference. Yud Kei Vav Kei is whether I have Lishma or not Lishma. It's still Yud Kei Vav Kei and still kosher either way. See, Elamai, the Mabit also holds like the Brisker Rav that Hidden Mitzvah is not about how something appears, but Hidden Mitzvah is about how halachically, how the level, the quality of the halacha at hand. And finally, I'll just do this Avni Nezer, which was a little tricky to read if you didn't see the whole discussion altogether. But in essence, the Avni Nezer points out He's talking about a shofar that is lined with gold versus a lulav with an eged. And he ends up saying, it's a little hard to read, as I said, but in the end of the day, he says there are two types of two dinim. The tre dinim here when it comes to hiddur mitzvah. There's an element of hiddur mitzvah, such as a shofar that's metupa bazav, that's covered in gold. And that is only relevant if you could see the gold, as long as it's not ma'aki of the kol, the tkiya, it's kasher, but there's an idea of seeing the gold. If it's hidden, it doesn't add any element. But that's about the noi. And there's a second element of the eged, and he's dealing with the question that you're holding the eged of a lulav and you're covering up, how's that hiddur mitzvah? I can't see it. My hand's over the knot. He said, because the eged is not an inyan of noi, of appearance, it's an inyan of halachically keeping it together, abagud achas. So when it comes to a type of hiddur mitzvah that's about noi, it's only relevant when you could see it, when it's visible. When it's a type of hiddur mitzvah that's a halachic requirement, a certain chumra, a certain added factor, that's even when you can't see it. And these two dinim are both true. Although the Bishkei Rav was very much about just one approach, it's only relevant when it came to a halachic application. It seems from many other sources that there's also an element of how something appears, how visible, how pretty something might be. Okay, so we'll stop here. Tomorrow, I said Leon will be giving shir, so we'll have Marmar Komas Mitzvah Hashem tomorrow. And sure, we'll let us know about this afternoon, what time he'll give shir.